You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your right. Hello, Suncoast. Thank you so much for tuning back in with The Ruthless Truth. I am your host today, Ira, and I am here with a local organizer, Sarah. How you doing today, Sarah?
Hi, Ira, and I'm really glad to be here, doing really well. I'm here to talk about the Florida citizens petition process being attacked by Governor DeSantis and his administration and what they're up to. It's pretty devious, so we should probably hop to it.
Most definitely. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have memories of, you know, having someone come up asking you to sign a petition. We're all very familiar. It's one of the most exciting things Floridians get to vote on every year. Really one of the ways we can really make our voices heard. But yeah, this process is under severe attack lately. Tell us a little bit more about the nitty gritty on this.
So petitioning was established in the First Amendment. The last portion of the First Amendment says, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And the doctrine of incorporation emerged, in the Supreme Court, like in cases like Glitko versus New York in 1925. They applied the 14th Amendment to making like parts of the Bill of Rights enforceable against states. The theory is if you have a legislature that's not being responsive to public opinion and what the majority of residents would want, this is a way to circumvent them and to let voters have a say. That was a quote by a political science professor at UCF, Aubrey Julep.
All right, interesting. So that's how the process is supposed to work. And like I said, everyone is somewhat familiar with when we all see those amendments pop up on what to vote on. That's always the thing that I'm most interested in when elections pop up. Now, unfortunately, these rights that are under attack, it's happened before, right? I believe back in 2006, we used to just have a majority, like most other states. You only need a 50% requirement for these amendments. But now we do have a supermajority that's 60%. So what is the intention, the effect of changing that from 50% to 60%?
Yeah, as a socialist, I believe that the supermajority was implemented to take control out of the hands of the people and into the hands of the ruling class. Republicans are a really big fan of the supermajority. You can find it all across the United States, and it's just been getting worse, like in the last 20 years. Yeah, I just want to remind people about the victories that we've won through petitions in Florida, most of them being progressive, like medical marijuana, giving felons the right to vote, raising minimum wage, all very progressive items that we would not be able to accomplish in the legislature.
Yeah, absolutely. A DeSantis government would never approve of those things. And the only way to get things that the people really want, like they very much want medical marijuana, they very much wanted to restore voting rights, raising the minimum wage would absolutely still be, gosh, what was it? 8-something an hour if we had not passed that through the initiative, instead of events slowly going to be up to 15 soon. So these are huge, huge wins. And even things like giving the felons the right to vote, of course, DeSantis has actively attacked that by making them, you know, ridiculously have to pay a bunch of fines and fees before they can get their rights to vote back. So, yeah, this is really the importance of the petition and the amendment process. So many of our victories have been won through it. And it really is important to note here, I think, Sarah, that I think this is a good point to touch on. Previously, the amendments that failed, such as legalizing recreational marijuana or the amendment that would roll back DeSantis's draconian abortion law, because those got almost 60%. I believe you have the statistics on just how close that was.
Yeah, the abortion amendment almost passed with 57%. We were 3% away from women not having to travel outside of the state to, you know, access life-saving healthcare. And that's really disappointing. And the bourgeoisie just endlessly sets up little requirements for the people to be able to, be self-determinating.
Yeah, and that got more votes than Trump or Kamala Harris, and we still didn't get it. That is a ridiculous standard. That is not democracy. How can you call that democracy? And so they've been under attack before. Their attacks have worked. We were so close to a lot of victories, but victories like that might genuinely come from very difficult to basically impossible with these new rounds of proposed amendments. I mean, they're going to become impossible with these new change to the petition process. So if you can get into explaining for us and our listeners exactly what these new laws and new rules are and how they're going to make democracy even further away from reach.
Yeah, out of reach, or more like out of sight, out of mind with our current state of things. So the current state of petition verification is already pretty airtight. You know, under the state constitution, a proposed amendment can be placed on the ballot, assuming it gets the okay from the Supreme Court. And this is even after the petitions are collected from at least 8% of the voters in the last presidential election. And for this current election cycle, that means almost 900,000 petitions, according to the Tallahassee Democrat. So HB 1205 passed, and that makes the process just financially unattainable completely, just like highly unlikely that any statewide citizen-led initiative would make its way onto the ballot because of a couple different things. And I'm just going to read them out for us. Smart and Safe Florida, the group behind last year's Amendment 3 attempt to legalize recreational marijuana, spent $152.3 million in an unsuccessful attempt to pass it. So there's already that level of money being spent, you know, on these amendments. So the DeSantis administration is, you know, claiming that they need to increase these requirements. So basically, under the House version of the bill, HB 1205, groups sponsoring a ballot proposal couldn't sponsor more than one per election cycle. So according to the Tallahassee Democrat, they would also be required to put up $1 million bond with the Division of Elections and affirm the people gathering the petitions on their behalf are U.S. citizens who haven't been convicted of certain election-related felonies. And if they hire someone who isn't a citizen and who has been connected to a felony, it is a $50,000 fine to the petition sponsorer. So it's, you know, just constantly raising the punitive stakes to intimidate these sponsors from even attempting any progressive legislation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's intimidation. It for the petition signers, it's absolutely needless bureaucracy. And to what end? There is no evidence that there's been any issues with the way that petitions have been previously working. So the only reason that they're doing this is, like you said, to crack down on laws they don't like.
Yeah, so the DeSantis administration is claiming that they need to increase these requirements for petition verification because of fraud. They have this bogus report that notes that they have 17 arrests that have been made since the Office of Election Crimes and Security that was formed in 2022 opened. This is essentially like a propaganda wing for DeSantis to make all sorts of bogus claims that he doesn't really have to back up. And he claims that investigation into petition fraud have been difficult because of contractors and subcontractors that are often based outside of Florida and ignore subpoenas. So that's his get out of jail free card.
Yeah, so he gets to be as vague as he wants. And then we know that some of these accusations were false, and he doesn't have to offer like real hard evidence. So, and even then, the handful of cases that he's claiming he has would never come close to possibly affecting an election outcome. So yeah, that's a wonderful point, Sarah. And another really big thing I wanted to touch on here, that this new law bans anyone from the state government from authorizing the expenditure of public funds for a political advertisement or any other communication for a citizen-led constitutional amendment campaign. However, the bill also states that it does not preclude state government or a person acting on behalf of the state government from reporting on official actions of the state government in, quote, an accurate, fair, and impartial manner. Posting factual information on a government website or in printed materials, posting and providing information at a public forum, providing factual information in response to this inquiry. So this is clearly subject to bias. You know, it's the DeSantis government choosing what they say is and is not factual, when they've already abused that in the past. We know that they have been falsely accusing organizers of submitting forged petition signatures. We know they've sent police to the homes of voters who signed some of these petitions that they didn't like. They've used state funds to spread misinformation about the amendment on television and radio. They threatened TV stations that aired pro-amendment ads with criminal penalties for the abortion amendment particularly. And when voters went to cast their ballots, they were met with a financial impact statement that claimed restoring abortion access could lead to serious costs for the state, which is ridiculous, which is on its face absolutely ridiculous. Like, oh, actually, you know, be careful, voters. You know, we're allowed to use like state resources to try to scare voters out of abortion, but anyone from the state government or to promote these citizen-led constitutional amendment campaigns, not allowed.
It's so scary. It's so scary what our current system allows. You know, like, I think that Liberation News lays out a pretty cool analysis, and it says, like, our rights are never secure, even when they are popularly supported, and the consequences of losing them are catastrophic for working people. Undemocratic voting rules, aggressive voter suppression, and open contempt for the popular will are neither new nor special. They are the way the capitalist state is designed to function. Working people need to respond to this in the only way that has ever worked, by getting organized, fighting back, and demanding a new system that is based on the people's will and needs. And I think that that really lays out the entire conversation today. You know, we have a governor who is using all the resources allotted to him to cut down on this direct democracy avenue, and we need to get out and make everyone very aware that this is happening. You know, HB 1205 has already been passed. We've got the next one, which is going to be Senate Bill 7016, which is going to be an amendment to the Constitution requiring the Secretary of State to receive a ballot summary and the full text of the proposed revision or amendment to the state constitution from the sponsor, and to have received the financial impact statement from the financial impact statement estimating conference. All of that to say, this second amendment to the state constitution is going to make it even harder for these sponsors to land their initiatives on the ballot.
Absolutely. And of course, and like we said earlier, you know, this is one of the very few, you know, rights that like people were using to actually make change happen in this country, and it's slipping away. So yeah, really great point, Sarah. So glad that, you know, to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here and giving us this deep dive.
Thank you for having me. Really excited to explain what is happening to people, because I feel that this is one of those things that not a lot of people know about, and it's incredibly important. Fascism is playing out right in front of our eyes, and this is definitely one of those avenues of direct democracy that is just being closed, and it's really sad, and we should all be aware of what's happening.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right. And thank you so much, Sarah, for the amazing deep dive onto this very important topic. But now we are going to move on to discuss the May Day protests that happened in Tampa this past Saturday. And here I have with me a local organizer, Anoush. And how are you doing today, Anoush? How was the event?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much, Ira. So the May Day protest was held on May 3rd at the Centennial Park in Ybor. We had hundreds of people that showed up to represent workers across all fields. The diversity of all the attendees were a stark reminder of the value we all produce through our labor. So as we advance the industries through our hard work, we do deserve dignified and balanced lifestyle to go with it. We had speeches from multiple union workers and representatives that talked about our rights as workers. We walked in solidarity as a group to learn and reflect on the history of Ybor, which reminded us how the brotherhood between immigrants and local communities laid the foundation for the cities we thrive in today. It was a successful May Day gathering, and I have a few voices I would like to share here from that day with you all.
Today. I came out today because I'm a laborer, and I've never had the opportunity to join a union as a laborer. I've worked in the restaurant industry my whole life, and I think that it's really important to have access to labor unions to help our undocumented coworkers, to help our elderly coworkers. I have a coworker who's 64 who's being denied Social Security, so he has to continue working, and I think shit like that is really messed up. So I'm here, even if he's not going to fight for it, I'm going to fight for union rights, because I don't want to be 64 unable to retire one day.
So why are you here today?
I am here to speak up not only about just workers' rights in general, but what's happening with workers' rights and federal government employment with the whole calamity of federal government issues in general since the new administration has taken over.
And why do you think it's so important today?
Federal government employees make up a huge percent of the public sector workforce. It keeps our Social Security offices open, the Department of Veterans Affairs, all of our, you know, state parks and everything that we use as the general public without paying. Federal employees keep that open, and all of those are under immediate harm and surveillance. So it's important to let people know what's happening in case those services are gone or if there's delays, because it's coming from somewhere.
Question was,
yeah, what's your question? Why are you here today in the protest?
All right. Because I don't like what's happening in our country, that it's leaning further and further into authoritarianism, and I can't sit back and do nothing and watch that happen. So I can't do a lot, but I can come out here and use my voice and stand with a sign and express my opinion.
I'm sorry. I am here because I support, even though I'm semi-retired, I've worked for the federal government, and my husband is retired Army, and I work with a lot of people that are struggling financially. They have low wages. They have no benefits. Some of them are living on the street, and this attack against workers is unacceptable. That's why I'm here.
And I'm here to support workers and immigrants because we're all people, and most of America is living paycheck to paycheck and having our government ripped apart and all our social services and other services for the needy cut is just ridiculous and unlawful. So I think we've got to stand up and take our government back, power to the people.
I'm here to support the people and people like me and just everybody who are just not getting what they deserve and what, you know, we work so hard and we just get pushed back. So I am here to hopefully try to make a dent into that huge pond that is.
Why are you here today?
I'm here to defend just the democracy that, you know, has been touted as kind of what everyone is proud of in America, and it's clearly being destroyed throughout the Trump administration and, you know, just kind of the Republican administrations of the past since Reagan and even before then. So,
thank you. All right. So why are you here today?
I'm here today with the West Central Florida Central Labor Council to celebrate May Day, which is International Workers Day, and to fight for the rights of all working people.
Why do you think fighting for workers' rights today is important?
Because workers deserve dignity in the workplace. Without labor, nothing would exist. We are the backbone of the economy. We are the creators of all wealth and the creators of all things.
I'm not okay with that. And if you can unionize, unionize, because that's the only power we have is through a union. The collective bargaining rights have been fought for hundreds of years by people like us. We're fighting for dignity, for all of us to be able to live a dignified life for our labor. And that is the reason why the 1% fight against unions, because we are the voice for all workers, not just union workers, all workers. So if you have the ability, unionize. Fight in solidarity with your brothers and sisters and don't let them exploit our children. The reason why they're targeting our kids is because they can't get the immigrant workforce here because they made it illegal for them to be here. So you wanna get rid of people, but you wanna exploit my children. No! I don't want your children to be exploited. I don't want my children to be exploited or grandchildren. That's a hard pass. No to rolling back child labor protections. Take care of every single worker, no matter where they come from and what they do for a living.
All right, wonderful. That was some powerful stuff. You know, everyone's motivation for coming out here today and the importance of that solidarity we need to have with each other as workers. Absolutely wonderful. Very inspiring. I feel very fired up.
Yes, Ira. Everybody was very charged up. Everybody had their hopes up. Everyone was electrified that day, especially the speeches. They were really good.
And that are intertwined. And that's the worker struggle and the immigrant rights struggle. And seeing all these groups come together, you got unions, you got community organizations that are fighting back against the Trump, the billionaire agenda. It really just feels like I'm in my element. I became a union leader because I saw my immigrant parents fight for dignity in the workplace, fight for respect, and fight for a dignified wage. And when I saw that it wasn't just gonna take them working hard and doing it alone and pursuing the American dream, that's when I said, no, I'm gonna learn how to be an organizer, because that's what it takes. It takes an organization, it takes unity, and it takes a mass movement to fight back. It takes all of us collectively to use our collective power to tell the billionaires that we're not consenting to this. We don't consent to dehumanization. We do not consent to these low wages and to unsafe working conditions. The time is now, and in order to win big for our class, we need to fight together, all of us. And why is May Day so important today? This is more important than ever, because the Trump billionaire agenda is trying to come for all of us. Not just workers, not just immigrants, but all of us. And they think that they can scapegoat us and make us believe that immigrants are the problem. No, the billionaires are the real problem. They are the ones that are creating these inhumane conditions for us. And we know the power that we have collectively, because we saw that in May 2006, what is now known as a day without an immigrant. And we had millions of people march out to the street to protest anti-immigrant rhetoric. And on that day, you know what happened? Meatpacking factories, they shut it down. They shut it down, and that's exactly the power that we have. Workers and immigrants together, we have the power to actually shut down the economy, because we're that essential. The billionaires and Trump's allies, They don't have anything. They know that they're weak. Even they have to recognize that they need immigrants to make this economy run. The U.S. has never been great for working people. When they say, make America great again, they're actually saying they want to drag us back to the time they romanticized, which was a time that represents absolute greed and suffering for people. So we're here on International Workers' Day to say that we're never going back in time. We will never allow our dignity to be dragged to a time where the billionaires romanticized. We are only moving forward. We know that the billionaires are just trying to make us scared. They're trying to silence us. They're trying to actually make us fight one another. And what they want to do is so cowardly. And we're here to say no. It's going to take unity. It's going to take organizing. It's going to take a mass movement. And you can't do that to us anymore. You're not going to divide us. We see the tactics. Not happening.
There's a lot of folks that's fighting for small pieces of the pie. We forget that we the whole pizza. We as the working class, we need to stand together, because honestly, it's the oligarchs and the billionaires that's coming against all of us, trying to take all of our rights, trying to take our education, trying to destabilize our country.
We don't want just economic survival. We want economic rights. We want housing for all. We want good living wages. We want union jobs. So we're not going back. People here today and in cities across the country are standing up to the billionaire agenda and saying, money for schools, not bombs. We need investment in people's lives, not into a tax cut for the rich.
We are in a class war because they're making billions and billions off of people like us who are working every day, going to work, doing our job, providing for our families.
The middle class has completely disappeared as the top 0.001% rich have just continued to hoard gold coins like they're dragons in some villain movie, while the rest of us are left to, you know, the crumbs, if that.
You think about what they're doing to immigrant workers, terrorizing them, sending them off to, you know, El Salvador. Thankfully, we had a victory with, you know, a Columbia student, Palestinian in Vermont, thank God. And a lot of that had to do with the activity, you know, and the activism of people on the ground. But that's what it's going to take, and it is a class war. We need to keep this going, because they have all sorts of plans for more things to attack our lives and making them 100 times worse.
It's about time that people got to rise up and fought back. If we do the work, we deserve to have a say over it. This is going to be a massive fight that's going to take a lot of work and a lot of people, so the more we're working together, working collaboratively, the easier it'll be to win.
We fought this before. This isn't our first time. This isn't our second time. And we have to continue to build up education, understand the history so that it doesn't get repeated. But repeat the good parts, because we know that within community, within class, within organized labor, within people who care about the people that they live around, their neighbors, we are able to overcome. Because we've done it before, we can do it again.
Listen up, we've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us, fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.